Welcome to Fresh from the Old Bailey, the special season on the Constance Martin trial, bringing you the case straight from the reporters who are watching it play out every single day, the Court News UK team. I'm joined, as ever this week, by Court News Supremo, Guy Toyne.
Hello.
Star reporter, Jack Hudson.
Hello.
And this week, returning by popular demand, Alice Snape, a freelance journalist covering the case who writes for magazines including Cosmopolitan and Stylist, among others.
Hello.
The past fortnight has seen the trial turn towards the figure of Constance Martin herself, who's been giving evidence. She so far spent 5 days on the stand, somewhat sporadically. Jack, it's been stop-start and a bit unconventional as a fortnight. You've been in court every day. What's it been like from your side?
I think it's fair to say absolutely extraordinary. I think, just to explain to listeners, I think the normal way a trial works is there's sort of two parts to any trial. There's the part before the jury, where the jury hears evidence, and there's another part where barristers and the judge sit without the jury, and they make applications, they discuss evidence which goes before the jury, and the judge makes rulings on the law in the jury's absence. Constance Martin, while giving her evidence, has completely obliterated that normal boundary. She's telling the jury things about unused material, about evidence that isn't before them. She's saying she doesn't agree with agreed facts that she'd previously agreed to. She is telling the jury about applications that the prosecution has made while they've been out of court.
So can you break that down maybe a bit more for listeners who aren't familiar with that point of procedure? The jury are only supposed to know certain things.
Well, yeah, and there's no conspiracy about it. So a judge decides law and a jury decides facts. So obviously, in any case, there's material that's relevant and there's material that's not relevant. And it's for the judge to decide what is the relevant material which goes before a jury. And of course, as journalists, we're permitted to sit in both parts. So we don't have to leave the room when the jury leaves the room and we hear about the things that happened in their absence, but we're not allowed to report any of that until after the jury's returned their verdict.
Jack and I have just come out of court today, and it's been a whole day of legal arguments, and the jury were only brought in at the end of the day to be released again. So everything that happened in court today, Jack and I have been sitting in court since 10 a.m. listening to different legal arguments, but we are not allowed to talk about them at the moment while the trial's ongoing.
So normally if a legal issue arose, if a defendant said something that a jury shouldn't be hearing, the judge would normally just say, can we take a break? The jury would leave and it would be dealt with in their absence. But we've sort of gone way beyond that point, and it's got to the point where the judge and the prosecutor have been shouting to stop Constance Martin as she continues to speak and speak and speak. She's sort of asked a question and she goes off on tangents about, mainly about the family court proceedings and social services and the way in which they took away the previous children. And she sort of cannot be stopped. And they try and interrupt her, but she is very determined to say what she wants to say.
Yeah, the judge has actually told her that she shouldn't use being asked a question as the opportunity to make a speech. She's been told off by the prosecutor, Joel Smith, to just answer the question, and the judge has also told her off as well.
The prosecution and defence have agreed between them which parts of the statements and which parts of the evidence they have should actually go before the jury. Some of this might be detrimental to the case of Martin and Gordon. Others might not. But if Constance Martin routinely refers to matters which are not before the jury, then it may be open to the prosecution to bring those matters before the jury and cross-examine Constance Martin on them. So what the judge has been doing in this case has been very fairly attempting to warn Constance Martin that there may be matters which the prosecution could bring before the court, which will be prejudicial to her case. And it seems as though, for the majority of her cross-examination, that Constance Martin has ignored him. And it's been interesting to see the way a judge of this quality, this very high quality, deals with someone like Constance Martin, who is and has, if you like, run roughshod over some of the rules of court. Because he has been plainly quite exasperated. And I believe at one stage he actually asked Constance Martin if he could get a word in edgeways, so to speak. So he has to be very, very patient with her in the trial process. And yet, on the other hand, of course, he has to try and guide her along the lines to try and keep the trial going. Because, as we've heard, she's been in the witness box for 6 days, and it is rather a torturous process. We have gone over some matters over and over and over again. And there has been, as we've heard, occasions where Constance has completely strayed off topic to make some of the very, very, very strangest suggestions that have been heard in a criminal court at the Old Bailey in recent years. There's one suggestion. She says that her family were suggesting that she was only having children so they could be sold on the black market, which, for whichever way you look at it, it's a strange suggestion to make. There was another occasion when she was asked, as she has been repeatedly, whether she thought it was right to have a newborn child in a tent in the coldest months of winter. And she said Jesus was kept in a barn and he seemed to be okay. Again, quite a strange thing to say in the context of a criminal trial.
She's made a series of claims, and we've heard from Guy there like a few of them, but there have been some particular claims about social services.
Yes, so I mean, it has got to the point where the judge has advised her against and told her that she's making wild accusations about people in court and out of court, and has advised her that that might not stand her in good stead. But she's made various claims. She said that the police have doctored the body-worn footage of the arrest to hide the fact that they were assaulting Mark Gordon. And yes, most of the claims focus on social services. So people might remember we had that set of agreed facts, but she has now said that she doesn't agree with all of the agreed facts, which were what the prosecution and the defence had agreed was true about the family court proceedings and social services. There are a couple of bits she doesn't agree with, and she's quite strongly said that she doesn't agree with the decision of the family court judge to have her children adopted. In fact, she said it was abhorrent, that it was a disgrace. She said that the way social services behave in the UK is akin to the post office scandal, and one day it will all come out and she will get a personal apology for it. And it has got to the point where the judge has had to give a set of legal directions to the jury that the decision of the family court judge was a decision she was entitled to make based on the evidence, and that there can be no going behind that decision in this trial.
And we've also heard about her interest in the website of a man called Ian Joseph.
So it was actually Constance Martin who brought up a man called Ian Joseph while she was giving evidence, and said that he ran a website called Forced Adoption. So he would help people who had had their children removed by social services. And she said that she had been in touch with him for him to try and help her. She did specify that he would never do anything illegal, but had said that he might be able to help her at some point, if and when she'd managed to take her baby abroad, which is something she's also talked a lot about in evidence. So when she first mentioned Ian Joseph, I think it happened at some point during cross-examination by Joel Smith towards the end of the day. And then the following day, she was asked a lot of questions about Ian Joseph's and some of the things that he recommended for people to do on his website. I think Jack had noted down a lot of the questions that Joel asked.
Yes, so Joel Smith quoted from the golden rules from Ian Joseph's website. Those included the fact that you should never, ever report if you are being battered by a partner to social services or child protection, because they will use it as an excuse to take your children away, and you should never report that. And Constance Martin was asked if she agreed with that advice, and she said that it was absolutely true and that social services will not help you and that you should report that to the police. And then another golden rule was that if you have fled abroad with your children, social services have come to take them away, then you should tell your child to say that they have had to stuff drugs up rubber tubes and tell the airport staff that, and then they won't make you go on the plane. And you should also tell your children to say that they've seen the social worker talking to an Arab about blowing up the plane. And Constance Martin was asked if she agreed with this, and she said that she felt Mr. Joseph was being facetious, but that she agreed with the sentiment that you should do anything to stop your child getting on that plane, because if your child gets back to British soil, you will never see them again.
I mean, this is all background, I suppose, to the broader argument that Constance Martin is very paranoid about social services, about the removal of her previous children. Has that been a big part of how her testimony has been built up? It certainly seems to be the narrative she wants to push.
Yes. So Constance Martin is now saying that two of her previous children were abused in care. She's saying that she saw bruises on her children at contact centres, and that she reported this, but nothing was done. And she eventually, she's been in prison in the last year. She says she's been proven right and that her children have been removed from those people. Now, the jury hasn't heard any other evidence about that. She hates social services, I think it's fair to say. And she also thinks her family was working with social services. She's talked about how powerful her family are, that they were having her followed with private investigators, that they were putting GP trackers on her car, which she thinks is the reason why their car blew up on the motorway, which is sort of what started the whole process of them being on the run. She said her family have connections in the highest places in the UK, including Parliament. And she says if her family say to social services, jump, then social services will say, how high?
Obviously, she's talked a lot about social services. In the agreed facts, it said that there were periods of time when she didn't go and see her children in the contact centre, like periods of months at a time. And during her evidence, she's tried to explain why that is, and she said it was because that she would go and visit them in units that didn't have CCTV, and she wanted the CCTV in there to prove how her children and her were interacting with each other. So she accused the social services of lying about their interactions and what happened while they were seeing their children. So she wanted it to be recorded. She said that at one point when she was trying to leave her, one of her children was clinging onto her leg because she didn't want them to leave, but that was never noted down in anything. And she felt like she couldn't. This is her reason for not going to visit the children was because she couldn't, because she felt like anything that she did wouldn't get recorded fairly, the truth wouldn't be told.
How does she come across on the stand?
So right back at the beginning, when she first took the stand and started reading her affirmation. So she was called out of the back of the court in the defendant's box where she usually sits, walked to the front of the court, and she took the stand. And at this point, a defendant is given an affirmation, which would be that they promised to tell the truth, the whole truth. And literally halfway through reading that affirmation, her voice broke and she said that she needed to go to the toilet. So everything paused and she was taken to the toilet. And I think we all sat in silence for 10 minutes. The jury was still in there. All the press were still in there. And it was just, we all kind of waited there until she came back. And she came back and she took her affirmation after she'd been crying. And then she informed us all that she was really nervous and found public speaking really difficult. But then she did obviously start giving her evidence. But I think it was about 7 minutes in, she asked for another break, but the judge said that we'd only been going for 7 minutes, so maybe could you just, you know, try and continue for a little bit longer. But I think that since then she's kind of got in her stride and she doesn't ask for so many breaks. And
it's been interesting to see Constance Martin give evidence. She, as you would expect, speaks absolutely beautifully. And yet she is sometimes a strange mixture of complete vulnerability, because we've seen her burst into tears several times. It's a mixture of that vulnerability and then bristling anger. She's angry with a lot of people. She's angry with social services. She's been angry with the prosecutor. At times she's looked slightly angry with the judge as well. It's been interesting to hear a little bit of her background as well. Obviously, one of the most interesting things to everybody is her relationship with Mark Gordon. So we've heard that she was privately educated, as you might expect. She went to Leeds University, and initially she was on a philosophy degree, and then moved to a course on Arabic, Middle Eastern, and Islamic studies. She's done a range of jobs. Apparently she worked in a cafe, did nannying jobs, and she also worked as a researcher for the Middle Eastern news service Al Jazeera. Then in 2011, she told us she worked as a photographer and took some of the pictures of the Egyptian revolution. She's been a beneficiary of a family trust since the sale of her late grandmother's estate 10 years ago, but there's been various disputes with her family about that. Apparently, she wants to spend the money some way. The family aren't too keen. And she said that she spent time in Egypt, Uganda, South America, Nepal, and Peru. And then we heard how she met Gordon in around 2014 in an Indian shop selling incense. Apparently, according to Martin, a woman in a shop thought that Gordon was about to steal something. Basically, they had some sort of conversation and they nipped off for a cup of coffee together, and they ended up traveling the world. And they ended up in Peru, where they got married in 2016. But Martin said that the relationship with Gordon has caused her endless problems with her family. And she chose not to introduce to Gordon to any members of her family, even when they were first in a relationship. And she said, "I'd broken down family ties about 2 years before I met Gordon. Then I sort of came back, but I've had a long history of issues in that regard." And she said that when I met him, I made the decision that it was for me, the relationship, and I didn't want anything to do with them, meaning the wider family. So what she's saying in effect is that she sacrificed her relationship with an extremely wealthy and extremely powerful family for her love for Mark Gordon.
So that's the background to her story, but we've also come onto the foreground, the death of baby Victoria, and she has been able to sketch out her own version of what happened. What is the basic timeline of that?
Yeah, so there's not that much dispute between the prosecution and the defence about the actual timeline of events. So Constance Martin accepts that she went on the run with Victoria. She accepts they ended up in a tent. Her case is, we'd heard a bit about this before, but it's come forward very strongly. Her case is that she fell asleep on top of her daughter. She definitely believes that's what happened. She says that on the 9th of January, which is only, they'd only been in the tent one night. She says she was breastfeeding Victoria, and she says she fell asleep. She woke up and Victoria was dead. They tried to resuscitate her, but she'd passed away. Prosecution obviously dispute this. They say that Victoria was alive for longer, and they say she died of hypothermia. But they're also making the case in their cross-examination of her that even if she's telling the complete truth, that she was still grossly negligent and she still caused her child's death because she had put herself in a position where she was so exhausted, she was in a cramped tent, and that's why she fell asleep on her daughter, if that is true. But Martin says it was just an accident and that it could have happened anywhere. It could have happened on a bed. It could have happened on a sofa.
Well, Joel has been cross-examining Constance. He has suggested that the baby died later on in the timeline. So Constance Martin says around the 8th or 9th. And there is some dispute between whether that happened in the morning or the afternoon or at what point in the day, because she's described the time in the tent taking on a different kind of quality. So she couldn't, in her memory, she's not sure what time of day it was. And Mark Gordon wasn't, they both dispute what time of day it happened. But Joel, for the prosecution, is arguing that the baby actually died days after Constance claims. And he has said that the reason why she said it earlier is because she doesn't want to admit to exposing the baby to extremely cold temperatures. The prosecution's case is that it was grossly negligent for them to have the baby outside in the cold weather. So he's suggesting that that's why she has said that date. But Constance Martin has accused them of not seeing the truth, that they wouldn't believe the truth anyway because they are pushing their own version of events onto her. And she thinks that she wouldn't get believed no matter what she said, regardless of it, if it's the truth or not.
And there are witnesses who say that they've seen the couple with a baby after the 9th of January. But Constance Martin says these people are mistaken. She's called some of them curtain twitchers. She said they saw the story on the news and that they just wanted to see the couple. They wanted to be involved. They, if they saw anyone who looked a bit funny, they thought it was them. And she's again referred to the unused material that's not before the jury. And she claims that there's loads, hundreds and hundreds of sightings, and people have seen her in Scotland and people have seen her all over the country. And she's cast doubt on that.
She thinks that some of the people just want their time in court. They want to have their moment. None of them are credible. Joel put to her that Miss Hidden, one of the witnesses, heard a baby cry for two nights in a row in Seaford. And Martin said that that could be any baby. It doesn't mean it was her baby.
Yeah, and there's witnesses that claim they saw a blue tent, and she says that that wasn't unusual and that she saw other blue tents there at the time.
Yeah, she also said, because one of the witnesses, Dale Goslin, believed that he saw like birth gunk, like afterbirth on the baby's head when he came across them. And she said that's absolutely ridiculous, and the baby had been born for a number of days before that, or weeks even at that point. So it's absolutely not true that the baby would still have birth goo on her head at that point in time. So there's also been, it's been really interesting to see, so that obviously the jury have already seen a lot of CCTV footage that formed a large part of the prosecution case, and it's been replayed to the jury while Constance Martin's being cross-examined. So the prosecution case is that baby Victoria was put into the little bag while she was still alive, and that's where she spent her last breaths. She's been asked to look at the footage again while the couple are carrying bags, while they're wearing their coats, to see where on their person baby Victoria might be. When they're suggesting that baby Victoria was still alive, the jury would be invited to look at the footage again to see whether the baby looks like she was attached to either of their bodies. So she's maintained that the baby was always on either her or Mark Gordon and would be attached to their chest in a sling. The jury are being invited to revisit that footage to see if it looks like the baby is attached to their bodies. At points, both of their hands are full of carrier bags.
And there's also been some, you know, it's, a lot of this stuff is hard to hear, but there's been some particularly hard to hear stuff about the mortal remains of baby Victoria.
Yes, Jill Smith has asked Constance Martin if she stripped her baby of dignity in death after she put the baby's body in a little bag and covered it in rubbish, including a beer can. And Constance Martin, one of the many times that she's cried in court, she said that she asked him not to use the word disposed of. She said she preferred the word place. She said she talked about Victoria not being just her body. She talked about her spirit. She said her body was her spacesuit, and that her spirit is still out there and comes near her sometimes. And she said she still hopes to give her daughter a burial one day. But she says that her and Mark were in a state of grief and shock, and they didn't know what to do, and that's why Victoria ended up being carried around in this little bag.
I think part of the reason, so first of all, they were carrying the remains of Victoria around in the bag with just soil on top, but she said that they would have to travel around with the bag, and they would get on a bus and they would get strange looks from other people on the bus because they were carrying a bag of soil. So she said the reason they ended up putting rubbish on top was so they didn't attract attention. And she said, oh, we look like bums anyway. So they just put the rubbish on top to avoid suspicion.
So obviously, one of the charges is perverting the course of justice. And what the prosecution want to say is that Constance Martin put her baby in this bag covered in rubbish and put it in an allotment, and that she was trying to hide crucial evidence. And Constance has admitted that she did think about the fact that there would be a police investigation, and she did know there would be an investigation, and she did know that the body would be relevant, and she has talked about the fact that she thought about getting rid of the evidence. She also says she's thought about handing herself in. She thought about cremating Victoria, but she says that she hadn't made a decision either way. And she did go on the 12th of January to a Texaco garage and buy a bottle of petrol, which she said was to cremate Victoria, but she didn't go through with it. And she talked about how her and Mark were so distressed that she felt that Mark said to her, "Should we just all jump in the fire and end it there?" And that was when she was crying, and also her mother, who's been in court, also broke down at that point.
Yeah, she's another point when she broke down was when they were talking, Joel was talking about her not allowing Victoria to have dignity in her death, and the fact that when her remains had been found, there was still feces in her nappy, and Constance Martin broke down then at that point as well and was very upset. She's also got really upset when Joel has referred to Victoria as it and told him not to say it about her baby. Yeah, she's also said at points, obviously we've looked at the CCTV footage again, and she did say at one point, looking at it objectively, it actually shocked her. She'd not obviously not seen that footage before because she was just going through it at the time. So seeing it again, she has found it difficult. It was good to hear about the cat again. Back in, oh God, it feels like a long time ago now, there was a list of objects read out in court that had been found when the car blew up. And one of them was a cat in a cat box. So Constance Martin actually talked about the cat, and it had been a family cat and it had been with her for a very long time. But in that moment when the car blew up, she knew it was the cat. She had to decide between the cat or the baby. So the baby was the most important thing. So the cat had to get left behind. But she said that she knew that it would be safe and a home would be found for it.
And that was the case?
Yeah, the cat was rescued and sent to a sanctuary.
At the start of this period of the trial, there was a lot of suspicion that Mark Gordon was going to testify. That hasn't proved to be the case.
No, Mark Gordon will not be giving evidence. He was due to give evidence before Constance because he's the first defendant. And it was on a Friday the prosecution case came to an end and the jury were told that they would be hearing from Mark Gordon on Monday. But when they arrived at court on Monday morning, they were told that Mark Gordon has changed his mind, as he is entitled to do, and that we'd not be hearing from him. And so we did have a short case for Mark Gordon. So his barristers had two experts. They had an expert on placentas who just had some slight disagreements with the prosecution expert on placentas. And they had a GP expert who gave some evidence about guidance on co-sleeping and things like that. So it was a very short case for him, and he won't be giving evidence, he won't be going into the witness box, and he won't be telling the jury anything. That is in spite of the fact that the jury has heard his police interview where he said that he would not speak to the police and that his evidence was for the jury, that he would give his testimony when he got to court, that he trusted the men and women of the jury would let him go once they heard his side of the story. That will not be happening. He will not be giving evidence.
And the jury themselves are now down to 11, I gather.
So the judge actually commented that we'd reached a watershed moment in the case because one of their number was being released because they had a prior commitment. And yeah, the judge thanked him for his service, told him that obviously he could follow the case, but he can't be in touch with any of the jurors. He can't tell them what he thinks, or that's it, he has to wave goodbye.
And this is because the trial was due to end last week. So the end date that the jurors were given at the start of this trial was the 8th of March. They were told it would all be over by then. We've obviously had numerous different delays. We've had legal arguments. We've had the Old Bailey partially blowing up. That hasn't happened. The trial is continuing. It's got a fair way still to go. So this juror obviously had a holiday booked for after the trial was meant to conclude. So he's been discharged.
And then there were 11.
And still it staggers on. It was meant to wrap up last week. Is there any prognosis as to how long it may still last?
Yeah, so obviously we're now outside the time when the jury said that they were available. So we've had to revisit that, and the jury have been given questionnaires and they've had to say when they're available for the run-up to Easter and the time after Easter, which obviously means that now jurors have other commitments. So the trial's not sitting at all next week because the jury aren't available. The judge also wasn't available for most of the days. It's sitting for, I think, 2 days before Easter, and then it'll be Easter, and then we'll be into April. And in terms of what we've got left, so obviously Constance Martin will conclude her case, and then we will have closing speeches. We'll have a closing speech from the prosecution where they sum up their case and make their final case to the jury. We'll have defence closing speeches for Mark Gordon and Constance Martin. We will have legal directions for the judge, from the judge to the jury, and we'll have the judge's summing up of the case where he sums up all the evidence from the trial. Those closing speeches and summing up should only take a couple of court days. In terms of the time, it's going to be a bit stop-start, so we might not see the jury going out for a couple of weeks yet.
It's extraordinary when you consider this trial, which, after all, is quite a straightforward trial. It's not overtly complex. Has lasted 7 weeks, or is going to last 7 weeks. And in 1953, the serial killer John Reginald Christie was tried, and the trial lasted 4 days. Admittedly, he was only being tried for the murder of one of his many victims. In this case, of course, there's been a number of difficult issues, but even so, it is absolutely incredible. And as a side note, the jury were sent out to consider their verdicts on John Reginald Christie. They took 85 minutes to come back with a verdict, less than an hour and a half. And of course, that verdict, the guilty verdict, meant that Christie would hang.